Ed Dickerson has written this article in the July 2014 issue of Signs of the Times. It's entitled, The War to End All Wars. Your narrator is Dwight Lainhoff. They didn't tell Leopold Loschka about the change in plans. The original route had been planned very carefully. But that was before a would-be assassin threw a grenade at the Greif & Stiff sports car he drove. The chauffeur quickly swerved, causing the grenade to bounce off the folded top of the car. It exploded underneath the following car in the motorcade, injuring the soldiers in that car, along with some of the bystanders. After the explosion, Leopold accelerated, and the motorcade proceeded at high speed to the city hall for an official reception. Although they had no way of knowing it, they had sped so fast past another assassin, a Serbian named Gavrilo Princip. He had no opportunity to act. After the reception, Archduke Ferdinand insisted on making a detour in order to go by the hospital where those who had been wounded in the earlier attack had been taken. Everyone agreed, but no one informed the chauffeur. So as Leopold drove down the original route, he made a turn down the wrong street. General Oscar Potiorek, also riding in the car, told Leopold to stop and back up. The chauffeur stopped just in front of a sidewalk cafe where Gavrilo Princip had positioned himself after his earlier lost opportunity, and seizing the moment, Princip jumped up from his table, brandished his revolver, and ran toward the limousine. Leopold, recognizing the threat, attempted to back up, but his foot missed the accelerator, and for a fatal moment, the limousine remained stationary. Princip fired his revolver twice. His first shot struck Archduke Ferdinand in the throat, and the second one wounded the Archduke's wife, Sophie, in the abdomen. Within minutes, both the Archduke and his wife were dead. Next, the assassin turned his revolver upon himself, but bystanders grabbed his arm, restrained him until the police arrived, and soon it all came out. The conspirators were all Serbs, so the government of Austria-Hungary quickly took countermeasures against its Serbian population. Now, from this point on, it was all downhill. The majority of Serbs shared the Russian Orthodox faith. Because of this religious connection, the Russians felt compelled to support them, and so they declared war on Austria-Hungary, whereupon the German allies of Austria and Hungary declared war on the Russians. England and France joined the war on the side of Russia, and by the time the world's leaders had time to think rationally about what they were doing, it was too late to stop the momentum. The assassination of Archduke Ferdinand took place on June 28, 1914. By August, virtually every country on mainland Europe had become embroiled in what we know as World War I. Shortly after the war began, author H. G. Wells published a series of articles that were compiled into a book with the title, The War That Will End War. That phrase soon captured the imagination of the general public in England and later in America as the war to end all wars. Now, those who witnessed that war firsthand might be excused for thinking humanity would never risk such a thing again. Even by modern standards, World War I was unimaginably savage and barbaric. Unfortunately, the generals continued to fight the war with military tactics that were common in a previous era. They sent waves of infantry against the enemy, and while this strategy might have been effective when both sides used muskets, they were minimally accurate up to 150 yards against machine guns. It proved suicidal. Repeatedly, the generals on both sides ordered infantry charges against an entrenched enemy with grimly predictable results. Soldiers fell as interlocking fields of machine gun fire scythed through flesh and blood like so much ripened wheat. The Battle of the Somme alone claimed more than 1 million casualties, and late in the war, chemical warfare added to the horror. It seemed impossible that humanity would risk such carnage ever again. Unfortunately, as we all know, despite the appalling waste of that war, many wars have followed. The war to end all wars did not achieve its objective. The problem, of course, is that the origins of human conflict lie deeper than any military or diplomatic solution could possibly reach. Indeed, the war that began all wars didn't even begin on this planet. The Book of Revelation tells us that this war began in the most unlikely place, and that was heaven itself. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back. That's in Revelation 12, verse 7. But who is Michael, and who is the dragon? Well, the name Michael means who is like God. And we know from the rest of the Bible that there is only one who is like God, Jesus Christ, the Son of God. John the Revelator also makes it very clear that the dragon is the ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. That's in verse 9 there in Revelation. But the dragon was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. You see, Christ won that battle, but the war against him did not end. Indeed, it spilled out onto another battlefield, our earth. Satan was hurled to the earth, and his angels with him, it says there in verse 9 of Revelation 12. Satan lost the war in heaven, was cast down to our earth. Unfortunately, Adam and Eve believed his lies, and his poisonous rule took root on our planet. Fortunately, Christ volunteered to become a human being and set aside his divine powers for a time in order to live as one of us and defeat Satan. And so the war between Christ and Satan continued. It's almost impossible to wrap our minds around the fact that the Supreme Being, ruler of the entire universe, chose to share our fate even to the point of being born as a helpless infant. This demonstrates the contrast between the ways of God and the ways of his adversary. Demons might attempt to possess a human being to enslave the human will and body, but God, by taking on humanity himself, allowed humanity to possess him. And in doing so, he liberated us. It's unspeakably amazing, unimaginably gracious, and unfathomably generous. Now, in ancient times, warring nations practiced single combat. Each army would select a champion, and these two would fight to the death. The ancients believed that whichever champion won that duel foreshadowed the outcome of the larger conflict, that his army would win the battle. And we see this, for example, in the story of David and Goliath. Those two fought to the death, and when the Philistine champion lost, the whole Philistine army ran for its life. So when Jesus came to earth, he met Satan in single combat. There are several hints of this, but we see it most clearly when Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil, it says in Matthew 4, verse 1. And there the devil directly confronted Jesus, who had been physically weakened by 40 days without food, and three times Satan tried to defeat Jesus with his temptations, and each time Jesus prevailed. Now, later at Calvary, Satan and his angels confronted Jesus on the cross. This time Jesus died, and according to the tradition of single combat, that was supposed to make Satan ultimately victorious. But in becoming a human himself, Jesus turned the rules upside down. As C.S. Lewis put it, when Christ, as a willing victim who had committed no treachery, was killed in a traitor's stead, death itself would start working backward. Now, in most wars, one battle stands out as the turning point. In the American Civil War, it was Gettysburg. In World War II, it was the Battle of the Bulge. However, such battles do not end the war. It goes on. But there's never again any doubt about who will win, and defeat is inevitable. Similarly, in this cosmic war, this war that began in heaven, Calvary was the turning point. At the cross, Satan was defeated. But he still is not destroyed. We still live with wars and rumors of wars, it says in Matthew 24:6. And for us, these wars seem futile and endless. But Satan knows that he is a defeated foe, and he's filled with fury because he knows that his time is short, it says in Revelation 12:12. As desperation led to chemical warfare in World War I, so Satan's desperation will drive him to a greater savagery in Earth's final cosmic battle. His pride will never let him surrender. For the Bible tells us that even after Jesus returns in glory, even after 1,000 years to contemplate his crimes, Satan will renew his attacks. But his eventual destruction is assured. Revelation describes this final battle, the war that truly will end all wars. When the 1,000 years are over, Satan will be released from his prison and will go out to deceive the nations in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them for battle. In number, they're like the sand on the seashore. They march across the breadth of the earth, surrounded the camp of God's people, the city he loves, but fire came down from heaven and devoured them. Well, that's recorded in your Bible, Revelation chapter 20, verses 7 through 9. Then and only then will war itself end. Author Ellen White expressed it eloquently. Sin and sinners are no more. The entire universe is clean. One pulse of harmony and gladness beats through the vast creation, and from him who created all flow life and light and gladness throughout the realms of illimitable space. From the minutest atom to the greatest world, all things, animate and inanimate, in their unshadowed beauty and perfect joy, declare that God is love.